Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello and welcome. Good day. It is Friday. It's the final Friday of the month of June, the 28th of June. Checking in. I'm Jay Cruz for Fantasy Sports Friday. I do apologize. The last couple weeks have been quite under the weather and dealing with just getting my health back and a little stomach situation dealing with and feeling a little bit better and ready to kind of jump in. I know there was a lot of activity in the last couple weeks. This month seemed to be sad in the passing of a lot of legends of the past. We lost Bill Walton at the beginning of the month, Jerry West not too long after that, and then Willie Mays right before the big celebration down in Birmingham, Alabama, and kind of celebrating the news that Major League Baseball has decided to include the records and the statistics for the Negro League players in Major League Baseball statistical categories. So while people at bars are talking about Hank Aaron or Barry Bonds or whoever is going to be who is the home run champion, Bonds hit the most homers, but there's the speculation, hasn't been proved, but quite out in the open, him and others of his era using the performance-enhancing drugs and the number of home runs he hit. He did hit more home runs, but, you know, Hank Aaron was not using performance-enhancing drugs. So now you can pretty much throw that argument out the window, and Josh Gibson is your all-time home run leader in American baseball history. Now, I have mentioned before there's a really cool museum to go check out in Kansas City, Missouri. The Negro League Baseball Museum is there in Kansas City. And it used to be, for price of admission, you could also go to the Charlie Bird Parker Jazz Museum right across the street. Now, you know, baseball and jazz, not a bad day to soak in some air conditioning in Kansas City, which gets quite hot in the summertime, and deal with a couple things that are really pure American history. Baseball, a pure American sport. And jazz, kind of a pure American invention right there in the heart of all that. So as there was a game between the Giants and the Cardinals in Birmingham, Alabama, and they kind of dressed the field up and sort of tied in the history of the Negro Leagues for a presentation on Fox TV, Willie Mays was invited to attend, and he declined, you know, saying he'd be watching the ceremonies at home. Little did we know, maybe Willie knew, but that was kind of really close to the last few days of Willie Mays' life. He passed away at the age of 93, and it's still a little bit tough to talk about. You know, I did not get to see the majority of Willie Mays' career. He really started in the 50s and played through the 60s. By the time I was watching baseball, he was already a 16, 17-year veteran. And, you know, the Giants actually at one point, you know, there at the end, they traded him to the Mets so he could finish back in New York for, you know, that reason. And I did see him in the World Series against the Oakland A's as a, you know, much older Willie Mays playing with the Mets. Obviously, the most famous play he's known for was the great catch in I think it was the 54 World Series. Ball was hit. He was playing shallow, ball was hit over his head, and he was running back straight center field to the wall, put the glove out, made the over-the-shoulder catch, stopped and turned around and threw the ball back into the infield all like in one motion. And it's just really, you know, an amazing play. An amazing play. Willie kind of had he was maybe the best all-around player in the game, certainly back in that era. He won a number of MVPs, probably could have won more. And in today's statistical bent on so many players in the game, you know, it would almost be arguable he could have won the MVP almost every year if they were to use, you know, today's kind of metrics on determining, you know, those things back then. But besides the greatness on the field, he was an ambassador to the game. He was also godfather to Barry Bonds. He played with Barry's father, Bobby Bonds, and they're both in the San Francisco Giants outfield. And pretty much when it comes to the Mount Rushmore of Major League Baseball, it'd be a hard argument to put someone above, or at least four people above, Willie Mays. I think he would be in the top four if you put him up on the Mount Rushmore, which is the four faces of presidents and whatnot, for his pretty much impact on the game. You know, an all-round player, great defense, great offense, and just a great person. He also dealt privately with a lot of the behind-the-scenes racism and stuff. He said he was happy to play in California, where people were more accepting of people of his color at the time, although, you know, he did play a number of years in the South and elsewhere. He did play in New York, you know, also an accepting place, more so than the rest of the country at that time. But Willie Mays passing away. Now, I have a kind of a interesting story of Willie Mays back as a young kid. You know, family had moved from Southern California to Northern California, and there were a number of kids in my neighborhood. They're all playing baseball and stuff, and baseball cards were talked about. And, you know, I had a pretty decent little baseball card collection going. Still do. Still have pretty much most of those cards. And there was, I had a cool Willie Mays in action card. I think this was from the 1970-1971 series. And, you know, they would have regular cards issued, and then some of the superstars, they would have special cards. And the in action series was kind of cool. Now, at this point, I'm living in the Bay Area, and, you know, it's pretty much Giants territory. The A's hadn't started winning World Series yet, or if they had, it was still kind of happening. But no one on the A's at that time had built up a legend. Now we can look at guys like Reggie Jackson, who was a member of that team, you know, who became a legendary player and a baseball card collectible to have. But so somehow the conversation with a number of other kids, some of which were my age, and, you know, I wanted to be friends with my, you know, soon-to-be or at the time new schoolmates. And a lot of them, you know, had older brothers who were, let's just say, a little smarter and sharper and maybe a little more cunning at times when it came to, you know, getting one over on a younger, gullible kid. That would be me. I know, hard to believe. But nonetheless, somehow I'm talking about this Willie Mays card I had, and this other kid, or a group of kids, decided they wanted to have that card, the Willie Mays in action card. So somehow there was a conspiracy against me among a couple of kids to get this card, which was quite complex. Number one, they had to talk me into getting the card out of my house, and then somehow this card had to appear in a little card game called Knockdown, which, you know, as a card collector looking back, I'm like, I'm shocked I would even think of, you know, and I was even kind of arguing against the game of Knockdown. You know, who knows if it was a real game or something just to get the Willie Mays card. But basically, you know, it was a game kids played with probably their multiple doubles or whatnot. They would set up a couple cards, throw a card up there, and try to knock down a card. And if you knocked down the card, I guess you won the card. So somehow, against my mom's best wishes, this Willie Mays you know, these kids were working on me big time and begging and the whole deal. And I don't remember all of the details, except somehow that Willie Mays in action card left my card collection, came out and ended up in the game of Knockdown, in which it was knocked down. And now, due to the rules of this game, it was in the possession of some other kid. My mom was livid. She was like, how can you? I told you not to do that. I told you bad stuff was going to happen. Knocked down and Willie Mays and these kids hoodwinked you. I don't even know what hoodwinked meant. I barely know what it means today. But nonetheless, the Willie Mays card was gone. I wasn't exactly over-the-top upset. I had other Willie Mays cards, you know. At the time, I didn't realize, you know, it's nice to have a card from each series, or different cards from different series can be worth more. For some reason, I never was able to acquire the Willie Mays in Action card again by purchasing cards or whatnot. And, you know, had to make do with my other Willie Mays cards. But that was a really cool card, the Willie Mays in Action card. So anyway, that happens. And then some 20 years later, well, nonetheless, I decided I needed a new group of friends after those guys, because they certainly didn't have my best interest out or any friendship, because once the Willie Mays card was gone, the kids were gone, and even if I had to bribe them with the friendship of giving up the Willie Mays in Action card and a silly game of Knockdown to make friends, that didn't stick too well. Anyway, so making new friends. Eventually, you know, some 20, maybe 25 years in the future, I'm in my mid-20s, and a friend of mine who was not involved in the game of Knockdown but did live in the neighborhood and, you know, was also a Giants fan growing up. Anyway, gave me a replica, porcelain replica rookie card of Willie Mays rookie card in the New York Giants, and something I still have today. So in the karmic sense, I kind of won that game. It just took a long time, and eventually my collection was paid back with something maybe of more value than that particular Willie Mays in Action card. But nonetheless, Willie Mays was always kind of the center of, he's just a great ball player, and this, you know, story with the card, you know, obviously made him my favorite player, even though the card had been kind of taken out of my possession. Even, you know, I'm still looking for a kind of a classic old felt, you know, they have these throwback baseball hats, and I always kind of wanted to get a New York Giants baseball hat, you know, the one Willie's wearing on the rookie card and wore in his years as a New York Giant before the team, along with the Brooklyn Dodgers, moved out here to California. So I'm still kind of looking for that. Basically, it's, the Giants colors, which you see now, the black and orange, although with the what looks like what you would now know as the New York Mets logo on the front, but it was the New York Giants. So kind of still would like to find one of those. Back before the internet, I went searching to all the different stores and malls and places to get baseball hats and couldn't find one. Ended up settling for a New York Yankees felt hat. Even though I'm not a huge Yankees fan, I respect the New York City epicenter of baseball. You know, at one time, three teams, the Subway Series, the Giants and the Yankees playing, and you know, the Giants and Dodgers rivalry, and then those two moving it out west, and they get to play this weekend. So the Dodgers are actually in San Francisco taking on the Giants, where there's of course the nice statue out in front of Oracle Park where the Giants play their home game. So I'm kind of going to be on a mission to find a hat that is the old New York Giants style, but I want it kind of in the throwback. And you know, it's a softer felt, not like the typical official new era licensed hats that Major League Baseball basically kind of has today. So might be able to find it on the internet. The only problem is I might get down to what exactly is my hat size. I believe it's 7 5/8, which is pretty much a big head. So, but Willie Mays passing away at the age of 93, and a legend that he is still, and his influence and everything he did, the game of baseball, sports and life, you know, kind of when we used to look up to athletes and they didn't disappoint us. Don't remember any scandals in the life of Willie Mays, unlike, you know, some others who have playing in the more modern times, but it's sad to see him go. But a good career. I'm one of the best. Man, 93 is, I would say, a pretty good run, and definitely an impact. And getting to play essentially with, you know, the Giants franchise until the very end when he did go back to New York City and wrapped up with the Mets. So I think nowadays there's going to be a lot of, obviously, a lot of Willie Mays memorabilia will be selling more because, you know, now is the time people are looking for it. You know, which is kind of odd. We always, you know, the minute someone passes away, now all of a sudden we recognize them, even though, you know, they've been around, and maybe you've gone a long time without, you know, acknowledging folks, old heroes, old friends, things from the past, and like that, until, you know, the news kind of comes out like that. So anyway, didn't get to acknowledge Willie Mays, and that story of the baseball card, still interesting. I'm sure I'll call my mom this weekend and she'll be able to give me more details, but kind of cool that I ended up with a porcelain replica rookie card of Willie Mays. Now, I have no idea, you know, if that particular friend who got it for me for a birthday gift remembers the story of the knockdown, you know, but that's ironic because I, you know, was looking for new friends and that person ended up becoming a good new friend in my life at the time. So cool little flashback with Willie Mays and the Dodgers and Giants playing this weekend. Should be a good series. Giants definitely a little more desperate and down in the standings. And we'll see what happens. Dodgers kind of dealing with a couple major injuries. Mookie Betts took a pitch off the left hand. He's got a broken bone, so he's out for a while. And he was having an MVP season, really putting up great numbers. And, you know, amazing that he's gone from outfield, second base, and been playing shortstop much of the season. And Mr. Yamamoto, one of my fantasy pitchers that I targeted in the offseason, bid quite a bit of money, and he's been pitching really good, is dealing with a forearm strain. So that's some issues going on with the Dodgers. Pretty much almost everyone in Major League Baseball is dealing with some injuries right now. The New York Yankees, mentioned them a couple minutes ago, they've been red hot all season, playing better than last year. And that was because most of their guys were healthy. They're dealing with a couple injuries now. Giancarlo Stanton is out for some time, and they also are dealing with first baseman Anthony Rizzo is out. They had to acquire J.D. Davis from the Oakland A's, who has been, he's kind of been passed around this year. He was with the Giants and wasn't exactly setting the spring league on fire. The Giants acquired third baseman, formerly with Toronto, formerly with the A's, Matt Chapman. And once they picked him up, J.D. Davis was expendable. He was let go and then signed a kind of quick, cheap, dirty contract with the Oakland A's. You know, hey, I'm in town, might as well stick around and at least play some ball with the A's. And as the A's are about to designate him for assignment, which is obviously a payroll maneuver, they ended up making a trade with the New York Yankees. So J.D. Davis now coming over to the Yankees, and this is the time where some strange things like that might be happening in baseball, where teams are trying to fill out the injury list and get through the hump and get to the All-Star game. And pretty soon we'll be up on the trade deadline. I think that's coming up at the end of next month in July. And it's going to be interesting who are buyers and sellers, and time to maybe look at your league and see if you're a buyer and seller or where you are depending on the format that you play. I'm Jay Cruz. We're going to take a quick break right now and be back to talk about a little bit more Fantasy Sports Friday on HealthyLife.net Radio.
When my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Roku is like having your own video library with over 300,000 choices. And it's the best way to get Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and so much more. There's a Roku player for every budget, so go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on the Roku banner.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Thanks for sticking around. It's Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm your host, Jay Cruz. And yeah, we've been out the last couple weeks. We're back live today on the 28th of June, what are sometimes known as the dog days of summer. Why is that? Well, actually, according to L.A. Dodger legendary broadcaster Vin Scully, I was listening to a game maybe 10 years ago, and that was kind of one of the cool things about moving back down to Los Angeles from the San Francisco Bay Area, was I had a chance to, you know, listen to Vin Scully on a daily basis. And even if you're not a Dodger fan, listening to that guy call a game, it made you a fan of him. And I really enjoyed all of his insights and things. But he said the dog days of summer have more to do with the astrological phenomenon of the dog star Sirius, not exactly the reason you think. It's like, you know, long hot summer, you know, panting like a dog, working like a dog, and all those analogies, but actually the star Sirius is in our midst. So as we roll through the dog days of summer, the NBA season and the NHL season just wrapped up. I've already seen the Stanley Cup, which was just won by the Florida Panthers. Congratulations, their franchise first Stanley Cup victory, and they've been in the league for quite a while, so they definitely deserve it. I think they've been in the league less than the San Jose Sharks, a team I certainly followed living there in San Jose for quite some time and, you know, grew very fond of them. They will get the number one pick coming up in the NHL draft because they stink. And meanwhile, back to the Panthers, who are enjoying their run with the Cup since the victory just a couple days ago. I think it was last Monday. In Game 7, the Panthers had a 3-0 lead, looked like they were going to sweep the Oilers, and the Oilers came back and looked like they were going to actually, you know, be the first team in hockey history to win the series after being down 3-0. Now, we did have that once in Major League Baseball where the Yankees were up 3-0, and then closer Mariano Rivera out there, and the Boston Red Sox just decided to go all in. Apparently the Red Sox were taking shots of like Crown Royale or some kind of other adult substance in the dugout, figuring season's over, let's just booze it up. And then the Red Sox end up winning 4 in a row and then going on to win the World Championship in I think against the Colorado Rockies that year. And that was cool because Boston, you know, had not won a series in so long. But anyway, I've seen the Stanley Cup being carried into the, I think, Atlantic Ocean, because it was down in Miami, maybe the Gulf of Mexico. It's now been in the water. And I saw somebody eating what looked like a really high-end chef-made bowl of pasta in the top of the cup, and there was some Parmesan cheese shaved fresh on top of the pasta, and the either player or front office guy from the Panthers was seen eating pasta from the cup. Now, I know nearly every baby that's been associated with a Stanley Cup champion is out there bare bottom in there. So anyway, the cup's made and it can be washed. And of course, there's been tons of alcohol drank out of the cup. And now I've seen a bowl of pasta. That's also been carried into the ocean. So anyway, the Stanley Cup goes on its own journey. There's a guy named Phil who is the keeper of the cup. If you're watching the game, he brought out the cup. It got presented. And that guy travels with the cup. You know, he'll come to your house and, you know, if you're the member of the championship team and you have such and such, so many hours, maybe a day or two, depending on who you are and you're basically pull. You know, if you're an average player, you maybe get 24 hours. If you're a superstar, yeah, maybe you get to fly at home to your native country in Europe, like when the Kings had it and Andrei Kopitar took it back to his homeland in Europe. So a cup's been a little bit of everywhere. And then if you happen to be in the film industry and script writer and looking for a documentary, I know there's been some documentaries, but I would like to see a documentary on If the Stanley Cup Could Talk. And of course, my favorite story was the Pantera story, where Dallas had won the cup back in the 90s, took it over to Pantera's house. Of course, the rock band with a legendary legendary party status said Vinnie Paul, the drummer, who his house was, you know, decked out in rock star style with dancing poles and whatnot. And Darian Hatcher decided he wanted to do the rock star thing, like throwing a TV into the pool, except it was the Stanley Cup, and he just missed the pool. Dinged the cup a little bit. There are two cups, and it's been around long enough that they started to replace the patch. They engraved this silver patch and then, you know, screw it into the cup for all the members of the teams that have won. So this year's Florida Panthers team will get their names are engraved on a silver patch that is now stationed on the cup, and it, you know, it's been around 100 some odd years, so they, you know, at the point where they have to take off some of the old you know, Montreal Canadiens from back in the early 1900s off there to keep the cup current. So it's going to be making its round. Check that out on social media, and, you know, look into the history of the cup if this is some new news to you. So anyway, that happened. The Boston Celtics had their parade, and both the NBA and NHL have their draft and get into free agency pretty soon, right after the end of the season. So the NBA, for instance, Boston Celtics won championship, hooray, hooray. And the NBA draft happened this week, which is not as exciting as it used to be. Now, that's twofold reasons. Number one, the influx of European players, especially the last couple seasons from France, which seems to have a mix of a lot of ethnicity, and with that, a lot of amazing athletes that are both really making the France soccer team, international football team, a powerhouse, and has been at the top of the tables in international football for quite some time. And they have a pretty interesting and competitive pro league. Victor Wembanyama was the number one pick last year, played with the Spurs. Very interesting athlete. He's over seven. He's like 7'5", can handle the ball, shoot. You know, and back when I was growing up, that wasn't so common. I think Ralph Sampson was one of the first big men, if you will. He was like 7'4.5", but he could actually shoot, dribble, and play away from the basket, where traditionally, if you're 7 foot, they're going to camp you out down in the paint. You're going to have to move around because they're going to be counting the 3-second rule on you if you stay 3 seconds in the key without moving. And, you know, basketball used to be, let's dribble down there, eventually drop it into the big guy and let them, you know, take the high percentage shot from just a few feet away from the key, or hopefully get an easy layup or dunk. You know, that was more of the Bill Walton, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bob Lanier, Bill Russell era. Now, 7-footers, you know, Kevin Durant, 6'11", and he is elite and coordinated and good away from the ball as any other guard in the game, and he's 6'11". So anyway, and college basketball has just been kind of weird, you know, to say the least, with the, you know, one and done situation, where used to be a lot of players would just skip college, go right to the NBA and get drafted right out of high school. guys like Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, and many before those guys. Spencer Haywood was the first to do that, and they called it the hardship rule back in the day. You know, basically, Spencer and his lawyers said, you know, claimed hardship that, you know, hey, basically, my goal is to be a professional basketball player, and since there is really no minor league like baseball and hockey have, you know, basically college is essentially the minor leagues for getting to the professional level in NBA basketball and National Football League. Now, obviously, with football and the impact of that game and how physical it is, you're definitely dealing with you know, grown men at a particular time. When you're coming out of high school or college at the age of maybe 18, you might be talented at football as far as running and catching and stuff like that, but, you know, the size and strength compared to hundreds of players is just so much different, you know, that going to college and continuing to grow and gain strength and develop at that age, which you are still growing, is definitely a big deal. So the NFL didn't quite have that straight to high school situation. Now the NBA, a little bit different. If you're someone who's almost 7 foot and you can play basketball and hang out and compete with older players, as many of them do, it's not uncommon, like this time of year during the summer league when basically all the players are kind of on the, you know, season's over, go ahead and work out, stay in shape, or, you know, people trying to get onto summer league teams and stuff like that. You know, there are cases where, you know, you could be someone who's like 6'10 at 14, 15 years old playing against, you know, grown-ass men in a league like that and doing well for yourself because you have the size. So anyway, there were a plethora of players coming into the NBA straight out of high school, and then the league decided to go with this one-and-done rule, if you will, meaning you had to at least play 1 year of college ball before you were eligible for the NBA draft. And that's, you know, kind of turned into, you know, a bit of a farce in what the NCAA actually is. Let's just really call it a glorified way for the colleges to make and earn money, and essentially are the minor league system for the NBA. Now, with that being said, go back to Dream Team in the 1990s, talked about this, and how the team was so good from the United States that they really opened up the eyes of the rest of the world into possibly playing basketball. Guys like Pau Gasol and some others, you know, were playing soccer, if you will, in Europe, and then the NBA came, and so the guys who were much taller, like Pau Gasol, who was there in Spain, Barcelona, when that team, you know, won the gold medal back in 92, you know, him and his brother decided to start playing basketball. You know, we got Joel Embiid right now in the Philadelphia 76ers. A couple of weeks ago, I'm watching the Champions League final, and, you know, he was one of the guys, guest commentators, you know, for the Champions League. He grew up playing soccer, and then, you know, later on played some basketball. Now he's, you know, MVP candidate each and every year in the NBA. But the one-and-done situation, you know, is kind of watered down college basketball. You have a team like Kentucky with John Calipari, who just recently resigned because his system has been, I'm going to recruit all the 4- and 5-star blue chips, come to Kentucky, play a season, let's get into the tournament, let's make a run, and then you guys are free to declare for the draft. And there's a ton of guys in the league from Kentucky who did the one-and-done thing. It's almost really tough to count. You know, or back in the day, you know, players had to go at least till, you know, maybe their junior season until most of them would declare for the draft. So it seemed like there was a bigger pool, at least from the American colleges. Now, with the transfer portal, you know, there's guys who are literally having small little careers, and especially with the NIL money, and I'm not saying don't take the money. Take the money. It's there. Well, it kind of always was there, but now it's just legal, if you will. And the transfer portal has, you know, definitely changed things. John Calipari, now with Arkansas, is changing his whole thought on recruits. And now he's going to run the Arkansas Razorbacks basketball program instead of having a bunch of, you know, 5- and 4-star recruits, blue chips coming in, do the one and done thing. He's going to try to have maybe 1 or 2 5-star guys, going to have a couple maybe 2-star guys, and he's going to look into the transfer portal maybe for some guys with experience and who can specialize in things he doesn't quite have on his team. So that is changing. Meanwhile, Europe is putting together, they have, you know, bottom line, if the athlete is the athlete that can impact your team, no matter where they came from, college, Europe, AAU ball, any of that stuff, you know, the scouting for NBA drafts is definitely a lot more difficult and a lot more widespread than it was, you know, back in the years when I was growing up till maybe the, you know, early 2000s when the trend of European players came in. So a lot of people drafted just the last couple days, a lot of Europeans. If you did watch the tournament, the two aircraft carriers, as Coach Al McGuire, who was a commentator back in the 70s and 80s, used to call them, you know, the big centers from UConn and Purdue, were drafted. And they'll be going to team. I think Portland got one. They got the guy from UConn and the guy Edie from Purdue has been selected by the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, that's a couple guys to watch. I think their overall traditional big man, you know, center position is going to translate into the pro game no matter what team they end up on. And, you know, I think one of them at least, well, one's from Canada. I don't consider that super foreign, but nope, not American. And, you know, the number one draft pick went to Atlanta, and the guy's from France, so have no real highlight reel on him. And then the other odd thing about the NBA draft, even though it's not exactly odd, but it just underscores the fact that LeBron James is the coach, general manager, and shot caller for the Los Angeles Lakers. They drafted his son, Bronny James, with the second or third to last pick, number 55 in the second round. They only have 2 rounds in the NBA draft because it's really not as significant as it used to be. But nonetheless, Bronny James has been selected by the Lakers and a chance to play professionally with his father. Now, the father-son thing in pro sports has happened a couple times before. Usually, it's pretty rare. I've seen Doc Rivers coach his son, Austin Rivers, in professional basketball. We had Ken Griffey Sr. It was Ken Griffey until Ken Griffey Jr., naturally. Ken Griffey Jr., maybe he was a more rising star, a talented guy, came up, and sometimes the son, the kid, will have all the advantages that the father maybe didn't have. The father turned out to be a great player. King Griffey was a really good player, a career 300 hitter, and played well over 20 years in his career. And those two did play together, I think, a couple times in Seattle and later on in Cincinnati. But, you know, King Griffey Jr. was definitely a superstar, up-and-coming guy, as opposed to Bronny James, who is LeBron's son, but hasn't exactly lit the league on fire. I mean, he played on a very talented high school team with a bunch of other NBA sons and athletic sons. He went to USC, and he had a heart situation where he actually fainted on the court and, you know, was cleared to play his freshman season at USC. But looking back to USC's basketball season last year, number one, they didn't qualify for the NCAA tournament. I think they did qualify and did okay in the NIT tournament. But, you know, not making the NC2A, especially with the expanded field, is nothing to really, really write home about. Now, he's now been drafted by the Lakers. And, you know, many scouts, even though he's got the genes of LeBron, he doesn't have all the talent and skills that LeBron has or what LeBron had at his age. Keep in mind, LeBron was already, you know, he was designated the chosen one, the king, King James. ESPN showed Akron basketball, high school basketball, when he was still playing high school, and naturally he went into the NBA, didn't go into college. You know, the one-and-done rule came after him. He was one of the final guys to get into the NBA without going to college. But, you know, bottom line, scouts were kind of looking at Bronny James and didn't think he really, at this point, is a polished pro prospect. Obviously, another year or so in college might be better, a little more experience. You know, the kid needs playing time, and that's the case with many kids coming in, you know, many of the folks who are coming into the NBA. Maybe they don't have enough experience, but, you know, maybe they have a bit of some kind of physical situation that gives them an advantage, and maybe they want to go into the pros a little earlier. At least the NBA does now have its D-League called the Developmental League, where that's probably where you'll find Bronny James. But this was clearly LeBron gets what LeBron wants. He got the coach he wanted, J.J. Redick. I mean, coincidentally, they were doing a podcast talking about basketball, and next thing you know, J.J. Redick's been named the coach of the Lakers. His son's coming up in the draft. What do you know? No other team selected him, and he's now a member of the Lakers. I guess there's another son who's about 2 years away from his possibility of joining the NBA. And, the Lakers have just turned into basically Team LeBron James. Now, LeBron's a great player, but as far as the Lakers, you know, this really doesn't do much for them in their future. They did grab a pretty competitive player from Tennessee in the first round, and it's been a while since the Lakers have had a first-round draft pick. Speaking of draft picks and first rounds, we're going to talk more about the NBA draft and some of the trades. When we come back, I'm Jay Cruz. It's Fantasy Sports Friday, HealthyLife.net Radio.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Everybody down! Dwayne Johnson here. The earthquakes you see in movies are one thing, but real life is a completely different animal. Just because you can't predict an earthquake doesn't mean that you can't prepare for one. In the event of a real earthquake, you should drop, cover, and hold off. Visit ready.gov/earthquake and practice what to do to keep you and your family safe in the event of a real earthquake, and you'll be seen as a hero by your family and your loved ones.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Alright, thanks for sticking around. I'm Jay Cruz, Fantasy Sports Friday. If you missed any of the earlier portion of the show, you can always go back to the on-demand podcast link here on HealthyLife.net Radio, which you can do for all of our shows. I think 99% of our shows are available on-demand and podcast. Some are not. That's because they're probably available on the host's website as well already. But nonetheless, this show is available on the podcast on-demand link. Maybe you have a friend or a significant other who's into fantasy sports or sports in general. Want to turn them onto the show. Maybe you want to find out more about yourself. Coming up in the next couple weeks, we'll be looking a bit of a preview into fantasy football. Now, To me, fantasy football is maybe the least exciting or least enticing of all the fantasy sports. I like baseball and basketball. Basketball probably because you have the least amount of players. And basically, the game of basketball, pretty much you get out on the court and everything you do counts as a statistic. You throw a pass, that guy scores, you get an assist. You block a shot, there's a lot of defensive statistics that count as well. And of course, scoring. Rebounding and assists, you know, the good old triple-double statistics there. And, you know, now three-point shooting, there's a lot of different things. And basketball, fantasy basketball, maybe my favorite fantasy sports of all. And I think as a kid, we think we actually had better fantasy basketball sports than baseball as well. But we definitely did, you know, the baseball card games and basketball card games as well. Now, baseball, also fun, you know, because you have games every day of the week. It's not just on, you know, Thursdays, Sundays, and Mondays, whatnot, like the NFL. And plus, you know, with football and pro football, there's always the, you know, the gambling aspect. If you want to pick a winner or, you know, decide, you know, who's going to cover, they're going to score so many points. There's a lot of people that really, you know, kind of invest in that. And also the nature of football, it's kind of tough. You know, you might start a player who looks like they're going to have a good game and they might be doing well, and then ding, they get hit in the head and they're out the rest of the game. Concussion protocol, twisted injury and stuff. Not that injuries don't happen in other games, but you have a chance to replace that player tomorrow as opposed to that was your one running back for the week in fantasy football. But nonetheless, football is king when it comes to sports here in the United States, and the fantasy draft season in August is really kind of the highlight of the fantasy sports season. And then the season jumps into September, and then by then you're either kind of winning or losing, and that determines your interest really for the rest of the football season and your activity in your league. That's also how daily fantasy happened, because, you know, a lot of, let's just face it, I'm probably one of the few rare individuals who will actually stick out a season, even though I might not be doing well, and find little reasons to, you know, kind of find some joy in keeping the season going by, you know, making a trade and getting out of last place, or, you know, trading an A-list player for maybe three B-list players with potential that might set me up for next season, all of which have happened at various times. And, you know, also won some championships too, which makes the season very exciting. Last week, one of my fantasy baseball teams had a huge lead. Maury's Wigs, we were doing great. We were up by like 100 points going into the weekend. Not only do we lose by like 50 points. One of the pitchers on the Oakland A's, just gas can, had a negative 25-point output, which was a drag because I also had a pitcher in the Minnesota Twins, Brent Ober, who had actually had a great game, a complete game, which is extremely rare. I mean, how many pitchers go the distance and managers allow them to go the distance? We get a lot of extra points in our league for a complete game. And even with that, you know, old J.P. Sears, I dropped him immediately the next day. Oakland hitting might not be bad to have on your team. Oakland pitching, definitely a no-no at this point in time. Gavin Stone was a highlight this past week. He also had a complete game as the Dodgers were playing against the White Sox. And actually, White Sox playing pretty good against the Dodgers. White Sox, literally the worst team in the American League. Dodgers, literally the best team in the National League. So, you know, that's something I remember my father said. You know, every day in baseball, the home team or the team that's the underdog has a chance to win. You've got 162 games in the year. You pretty much figure every team is going to win a third, every team is going to lose a third, and it's what they do with that third in the middle and how they end up edging it out. That's where the real competition happens. And as I was alluding to Vince Scully and the quote-unquote dog days of summer, we're kind of there right now. Almost, you know, I have injuries on my team. Every other owner has injuries on their team. You know, we can carry up to four injured list players, and add players as it goes, but this has been a really tough year for pitching in general all across the board. A lot of really talented pitchers going down with the Tommy John surgery, and it's just been a bit more difficult. I think the pitch clock has something to do with it, but, you know, at least I'm not, you know, it's just not my team. It's pretty much everybody. So, anyway, last week was a bit of a disappointment as Maurice Wiggs had a big lead going into the weekend and then ended up, losing that particular game. But so far we're at 500, and if the season were to end today, I would be in the playoffs. So, in general, doing better than last year. At least last year all my injuries happened in spring training, and I really had to struggle. But by doing that, I acquired a lot of cheaper players that were available, and was able to kind of, you know, keep my salary cap a little more manageable, you know, heading into this year. So there's still a lot going on with that. As far as trades right now, it's been a little slow. There was a new owner who was over aggressive and seemingly trading every day, and, you know, with a lot of really silly offers that I kind of had to reject that came my way, but that has slowed down. And as I look at my team, you know, I'm trying to find it might not, you know, the minute I make the trade, I would probably regret it, but I have an abundance of really good catchers. I have Will Smith of the Dodgers, and I have William Contreras of the Milwaukee Brewers. Now, Contreras is rated as a like top 10, top 12 player based on the points he has accumulated during the season. Now, he's not a leader in any one particular category, but the way points go in this league, he gets points each and every day for a little bit of everything he does. And I can only really start one catcher a day. Will Smith is also up there very high, so I pretty much have to play one as a utility player, which kind of, you know, hamstrings me as far as getting a couple other players in that might be good as well. Now, in a perfect world, I would be able to trade maybe, and I would say Will Smith, because my salary with him is a slight bit higher than Contreras, although both of them I got very cheap. I was able to get Will Smith last year in the original auction draft for $5. This year his salary is $6 as it increases 1 year. And William Contreras, last year I picked up for $1, so he's a $2 player this year. You know, he'll move up to $5 next year, and Smith will move up to $9 next year. Still, both very inexpensive. Combined, I've got two great offensive players at the catcher position, which is pretty thin, for a total of $14. I would like to find a quality pitcher, hopefully a starter, for one of the two, ideally Will Smith. He's just slightly more expensive than Contreras. We'll see what happens. I've considered pulling the trigger and making the trade, and then, I don't know, I just can't find quite the right situation yet. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, the minute I make this trade, the other guy I keep is going to get injured, and I'm going to be shafted and not have any good catchers at all. But nonetheless, you know, putting one in as a utility player or essentially my designated hitter has been what I've been doing, even though I have some other players I could use in that same position and get a quality starter. So that's something I'm considering, and, you know, we'll see what happens with that. In the NBA and also fantasy basketball, my team, the 11-11s, which finished in third place last year, not bad, not as great as I'd like to, but we are what is known as a keeper league. We do a snake draft, meaning if you draft number one and or two at the top and get an early selection in, say, round one, you get like the 11th or 12th selection in round two, and then back to one or two in round three, and back to the bottom of the order in the next round. So our kind of position draft, when you select a player, that's sort of where they stay for the next year as you keep players. We keep four players, up to four. You don't have to keep all four, but I do. And heading into next year, I've got five really good players, and I'm considering keeping. one of which was just involved in a trade. Mikal Bridges went from the Brooklyn Nets to the New York Knicks. So he pretty much gets to live in the same place as far as he's living in New York, and now he's just going to Madison Square Garden to work, as opposed to the, I think the Barclays Center in Brooklyn is where the Nets played. But very good up-and-coming player, and I had him as around a fourth, fifth, or sixth, you know, early mid-round pick in last year's draft. Now, I'd already kind of looked at the players from that team going into next year, knowing I can keep four. My original selection, and I've had him for the duration of this league, which is now going into, I think, our sixth, maybe seventh season, James Harden. And I had the number one pick at the beginning of the league, and back then he was just red hot. He was scoring, he had a streak of number of games where he was scoring like 40 a night. He doesn't put up quite the same numbers, but he still ranks like in the top 20, you know, scoring assists, and he's now with the Clippers, so he's got other teammates that will take away a lot of the scoring. His numbers aren't as high as they were, but he's still worthy of a high pick. His value is now a number two pick, so last year I was able to get a first-round draft pick, in which I took Kevin Durant, player I really like. Looking back, I could have grabbed Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. He was on the board, and I almost took him, except the fact that my team is very heavy on the shooting guards already, with James Harden. Out of college, I drafted De'Aaron Fox. He's a point guard for the Sacramento Kings. He's a good one, and he's been consistent. And, you know, considering I got him out of the draft, and he's been on my team since the beginning, kind of an identity thing, and someone I like to keep as a centerpiece, as James Harden is too. Also, a couple seasons ago, I was able to select, I think in the eighth round, Anthony Edwards. If you're watching the Minnesota Timberwolves in the playoffs and you hadn't seen him before, you know why. I'm definitely happy to keep him. So my five keepers, and I can only keep four, Kevin Durant, James Harden, De'Aaron Fox, Anthony Edwards, and Mikal Bridges. And until a couple of days ago, I was pretty content with keeping Durant, Edwards, Harden, and Fox. Now, Bridges got traded to the Knicks, and I go, wow, that's really going to, I think, give him a boost in his productivity. He's going from, you know, basically a kind of a bottom rebuilding team with Brooklyn, and they're going to be bottom and rebuilding, although they're going to have draft picks from now till next decade off of this trade, and the Knicks are not going to have many draft picks from now till this next decade. But, you know, Bridges will be reunited with a handful of college teammates from Villanova. And those guys made a good run in the playoffs. Jalen Brunson will be one of his running mates. And I don't know, that looks like an exciting team. The Knicks kind of brought things together last year. And he's a younger player with plenty of upside. So, you know, the question is, you know, James Harden's less effective than he was, and Kevin Durant's 35. I saw a report the other day that Kevin Durant was linked to a possible trade to the Houston Rockets. Turned out hasn't happened and might not happen. Might have just been one of those rumors with all the different speculation going around in the NBA movement. But Kevin Durant comes with a first-round draft pick tag, and everybody else is a little bit less than that. So at this point, there's a possibility of keeping Bridges, Harden, Fox, and Edwards, and, you know, taking a risk of not keeping Durant, putting him back into the draft pool. However, at the number one draft choice, there's a good chance there might be only two or three other owners in my league who are also giving up a number one draft choice player, and therefore the selection of Durant may or may not be able to come back to me with my first pick in the draft. Harden's already round two, and then I think these other guys you know, are valued pretty high. So, you know, putting Durant back into the pool, kind of risky. Might not keep him, but I'll get another player of very high value in round one, if that were to happen. Previously to that, I was probably just going to let Mikal Bridges go back into the pool, even though that was a tough choice. So anyway, that's something to keep in mind if you're playing and how your players are going to be affected depending on, you know, their whatever your league selects. Are you a keeper league? Are you a, you know, redo the league from top to bottom each and every season? Are you a dynasty league? In the dynasty league, I have James Harden there, and he's going to be expensive, so that's going to be an interesting choice keeping him. My dynasty league played pretty well, finished fourth place. Again, like to be better, but, you know, if you can finish in the top four, mate, you got a chance to, you know, go to the championship and end up in a consolation championship. So that is a team that's a bit longer in the tooth because I also have LeBron James on that team, you know. And even though he's going to be 40 next year, he had a pretty good season, very impactful. And it's just interesting having those old veterans even on a dynasty team when you should be thinking, you know, I need to get young players and keep them for the future. The NBA tends to skew towards the more experienced players, and they tend to get more of the big points, more of the championships, and, you know, keep them for one more year. If everything, the wheels fall off, I'll let them go, and I'll have that money to spend in the following drafts. So I'm Jay Cruz. Coming up in the next few weeks, we'll be looking deeper into NFL, some of the newer players coming into the league, a lot of impactful new quarterbacks, impactful new wide receivers, and a lot of running backs that change teams. Saquon Barkley's in Philadelphia, Derrick Henry's in Baltimore, and a lot of other good stuff there. I hope you enjoyed Fantasy Sports Friday today with me, Jay Cruz. We'll replay the show on Saturday morning, 9 a.m., and back Friday at 11, live next week. Thanks for listening.